Imagine a man who could vanish in plain sight, who possesses lethal skills honed since childhood, yet uses them not for personal gain, but to help those who cannot help themselves. This is the essence of Evan Smoke, codenamed Orphan X, a character who has captivated millions of readers worldwide and launched Greg Hurwitz's most successful series to date. Since its 2016 release, Orphan X has been translated into 24 languages and caught the attention of Hollywood, with Bradley Cooper attached to the film adaptation. What makes this thriller so compelling isn't just its breathtaking action sequences, but its exploration of humanity in a world of violence. Hurwitz, already established with bestsellers like Your Next, created in Evan Smoke a character that resonates with our desire for justice in an unjust world, a modern knight-errant who operates by his own moral code. As Stephen King noted, Orphan X is the most gripping, high-octane thriller I've read in a long time. 12-year-old Evan sits in a black sedan, face bruised and bleeding, as he's driven away from East Baltimore by Jack Johns, a square-built 50-something man with weathered hands and kind eyes. Jack offers him a crisp white handkerchief for his wounds, a simple gesture that would become symbolic of their complex relationship, both healing and preparing for more pain. When Evan asks if he'll get hurt where they're going, Jack pauses, then promises never to lie to him, and answers simply, "Sometimes." The honesty in that moment sets the foundation for their unique bond. This marks the beginning of Evan's transformation into Orphan X, one of several children selected for the Orphan Program, a classified government initiative designed to create perfect assassins from malleable young minds. Through carefully woven flashbacks, we witness Jack's unorthodox parenting as he raises Evan to be both lethal and human. Unlike other handlers in the program who focus solely on creating efficient killing machines, Jack takes a holistic approach. He teaches Evan to respect life even while becoming capable of taking it, often reminding him that the hard part isn't turning you into a killer. The hard part is keeping you human. This philosophy becomes the cornerstone of Evan's training. Jack's training regimen is comprehensive, brutal, and relentless. Evan learns to move under live fire in specially constructed kill houses, endures weekly mace spray sessions to build pain tolerance, masters advanced surveillance techniques, and practices psychological manipulation through carefully orchestrated social experiments. His marksmanship training progresses from conventional paper targets to increasingly disturbing ones, mannequins with ketchup-filled lettuce heads as skulls, designed to simulate the reality of taking human life. The training extends beyond physical skills to include languages, technology, and even social engineering. When Evan questions this seemingly dehumanizing approach, Jack shares the Cherokee legend of two wolves battling inside each person. One representing darkness, fear, and cruelty, the other light, compassion, and humanity. Their challenge, Jack explains, is to feed both, to maintain the balance between warrior and protector. Beyond combat skills, Jack meticulously instills in Evan a moral framework built around 10 commandments, rules that will not only keep him alive, but preserve his humanity in a world designed to strip it away. These include never make it personal to maintain objective judgment, play offense, not defense, to stay ahead of threats, and most importantly, never let an innocent die. Each commandment is taught through real-world scenarios and hard-won experience, often accompanied by Jack's own stories of success and failure in the field. This combination of lethal capability and moral code creates not just a weapon, but a protector, someone who will eventually break free from his government handlers to become the Nowhere Man, helping those who have nowhere else to turn. Through years of training, Jack shapes Evan into something unprecedented, an operative with both the skills to survive in the shadows and the moral compass to use those skills for good. Their relationship evolves from handler and asset to something closer to father and son, though both know such attachments are dangerous in their world. Years later, Evan has established himself in Los Angeles, living in a luxury high-rise called Castle Heights, a name that proves ironically fitting for his fortress-like dwelling. Behind what appears to be an ordinary apartment door lies a meticulously fortified penthouse that would impress military security experts. The entryway features a steel core door ingeniously concealed by wood laminate, while every window is fitted with bullet-resistant Lexan glass and retractable titanium sunscreens that can transform the apartment into an impenetrable box within seconds. The walls, reinforced with Kevlar and steel mesh, could withstand most explosive devices. The interior space reflects both Evan's minimalist philosophy and tactical mindset. The sparse open-concept layout eliminates potential hiding spots and provides clear sightlines throughout. Polished concrete floors offer durability and minimize sound, while commercial-grade stainless steel appliances stand ready for long-term sustainability. The vertical garden of herbs, basil, thyme, and mint cascading down one wall, serves as both practical food source and the apartment's sole concession to organic life, creating an almost poignant contrast to the sterile environment. At the heart of this urban fortress lies The Vault, a 400-square-foot armory and tech center that would make most intelligence agencies envious. Accessed through an ingeniously concealed door in his oversized shower, this room houses multiple redundant computer systems, cryptocurrency wallets, and offshore banking accounts that fund his operations. The walls are lined with weapons, tactical gear, and various identities, each meticulously maintained and ready for immediate deployment. His security measures extend far beyond physical barriers into the digital realm. His custom Roam Zone phone, reached at 1-855-2-NOWHERE, employs a proprietary routing system that bounces calls through 15 virtual telephone switches across 6 continents before finally routing through China's Jiangsu province, creating an untraceable communication network that he regularly rotates and updates. Every device in his home operates on a closed network with military-grade encryption. Despite, or perhaps because of, these extensive precautions, Evan maintains a carefully crafted persona as an unremarkable importer of industrial cleaning supplies. This cover story provides plausible explanations for international transactions while being boring enough to discourage further inquiry. Yet the mundane aspects of condo living present unique challenges for someone of his background. HOA meetings about lobby beverage selection, awkward elevator small talk, and neighborly conversations about weather become exercises in maintaining his cover. These moments of forced normalcy create an almost tragicomic contrast to his secret life while highlighting his profound isolation. This isolation manifests not just physically but emotionally. His apartment, despite its technological sophistication, lacks any personal touches. No photos, no mementos, no evidence of a life lived rather than simply survived. The only non-tactical ritual in his daily routine is meditation on his Turkish rug, where he practices focusing solely on his breath until achieving perfect stillness, a discipline that helps him process trauma and maintain the razor-sharp control his dangerous work demands. The stark contrast between Evan's sterile living space and the chaotic, lived-in apartments of his neighbors, particularly single mother Mia Hal and her adopted son Peter, underscores the heavy price his training and lifestyle have extracted. While his fortress effectively keeps threats at bay, it also serves as a barrier to the human connections that might make his life worth protecting in the first place. His sanctuary has become, in many ways, his prison. When his special Roam Zone phone rings, Evan answers with his standard phrase, "Do you need my help?" This time, it's Marina Aguilar, a frightened Salvadoran teenager who received his number from a previous client. After verifying her identity, Evan arranges to meet at her Boyle Heights home. There, he discovers Marina is protecting her 11-year-old sister Carmen from a corrupt LAPD detective named Bill Chambers, who has been sexually exploiting her. The entire block is controlled by Chambers, who brands women with his police-issue Glock to mark them as his property. when Morena tearfully confesses she just doesn't want her sister to be all broken like me, Evan responds with quiet determination. You don't have to worry about that anymore. This mission exemplifies Evan's work as the Nowhere Man, a vigilante who helps those with nowhere else to turn. After eliminating Chambers, Evan gives Morena his only request. Find someone else who needs help and share his number. 1-855-2-NOWHERE. He explains this helps him reach people in different circumstances than he would find himself. Additionally, he arranges for Morena to access nearly $88,000 through her deceased biological father's accounts and insurance, giving her not just safety, but opportunity. This pattern of operation reveals Evan's deeper motivation. Having been trained as a weapon, he now uses those skills to protect rather than destroy. Each mission represents not just justice for victims, but a form of redemption for Evan himself, a way to balance the violence of his past with acts of protection. The Nowhere Man isn't just what Evan does, it's who he's chosen to become in defiance of what the orphan program intended. His approach combines tactical precision with genuine compassion. He doesn't just eliminate threats, he creates sustainable solutions, providing financial resources, removing systemic obstacles, and empowering his clients to rebuild their lives. This methodology reflects Jack's influence. The humanity his mentor fought to preserve within him now drives his mission to protect others. Living in self-imposed seclusion, Evan unexpectedly becomes acquainted with his neighbors, Mia Hall, a district attorney, and her inquisitive 8-year-old son, Peter. Their first encounter occurs when Peter notices Evan's specialized equipment in the elevator, leading to a brief exchange. A subsequent chance meeting provides Evan an opportunity to return Mia's misplaced shopping items. During a shared meal at their apartment, Peter candidly shares his adoption story and family background. Mia later explains their choice of residence at Castle Heights, noting how her professional role sometimes involves security considerations. When asked about his own family, Evan simply indicates he has none. These social interactions create tension with Evan's carefully structured lifestyle. When Peter accidentally damages a valuable antique in Evan's apartment, Evan responds with unexpected patience, helping treat the minor injury. He later agrees to watch Peter during an emergency, sharing wisdom about resilience and new beginnings through their conversation about school challenges. Their developing friendship leads to a meaningful evening where Evan and Mia share personal moments while listening to Oscar Peterson's Hymn to Freedom. They exchange thoughts about happiness, leading to a brief romantic connection that Mia gently ends, mindful of potential complications. For Evan, these relationships present both opportunity and risk. While potentially compromising his professional obligations, they offer glimpses of ordinary life experiences he never had. A child's handprint on his typically immaculate refrigerator becomes a powerful symbol, initially disturbing his sense of order, but ultimately representing something he's reluctant to erase. The situation reaches a critical point when Mia's work follows her home as individuals connected to her cases breach Castle Heights security. Peter sends an urgent message to Evan requesting help. Despite knowing that intervention would reveal aspects of his true identity, Evan chooses to protect them, demonstrating how human connections have transformed his priorities. Evan's carefully constructed world unravels when he receives a call from a woman named Katrin White, who claims gamblers are threatening to kill her father over a $2.1 million debt. Their meeting at a dim sum restaurant is interrupted by sniper fire, forcing Evan to eliminate an attacker and escape with Katrin. This incident marks a crucial turning point. Evan is no longer the hunter, but the hunted. The professional precision of the attack suggests government involvement, and Evan soon discovers his pursuer is Danny Slatcher, codenamed Orphan Zero or Orphan O, another graduate of the same covert program that trained Evan. When Evan confronts Slatcher by phone, the revelation is chilling. Which orphan are you? The answer explains how Slatcher could track him so effectively and connect him to the Nowhere Man identity. Someone has hired one of Evan's own kind to hunt him, someone who understands his methods and background. This pursuit forces Evan to question everyone around him. He discovers Katrin White is actually Danica White, a high-roller gambler manipulated by Slatcher's team. They threatened her estranged daughter, Samantha, to ensure her cooperation and tailored her story specifically to exploit Evan's guilt about Jack, suggesting they knew about his past. The cat-and-mouse game escalates when Katrin slash Danica betrays Evan, stabbing him with his own knife after he rescues her from Slatcher's team. As she backs away sobbing, she explains that Slatcher forced her to betray him and that her father wouldn't be safe until Evan was dead. This betrayal nearly costs Evan his life as he staggers away bleeding, fighting through excruciating pain by focusing on his breathing, one breath at a time. He manages to drive back to Castle Heights, leaving a trail of blood through the parking garage where Mia and Peter find him. Despite Mia's insistence that he go to a hospital, Evan refuses and performs emergency self-surgery in his apartment. The hunt culminates in a brutal technical fight between Evan and Slatcher, using various martial arts styles. After smashing through a mirror and dropping to a footbridge below, they continue their battle on a parking structure roof. The devastating exchange leaves both men severely injured, with Slatcher ultimately hanging from the edge, gripping Evan's katana sword. When Evan rotates the blade, it severs Slatcher's fingers, sending him plummeting 7 stories to his death. Throughout the novel, Evan is haunted by his past, particularly his complex relationship with Jack Johns, the closest thing he had to a father figure. Through richly detailed flashbacks, we witness Jack's unorthodox parenting methods as he shapes Evan into both a lethal operative and a human being capable of moral judgment. These memories reveal training sessions where Jack would deliberately create ethical dilemmas, forcing young Evan to question orders and develop his own moral compass. When young Evan expresses deep concern about a life of perpetual loneliness, Jack acknowledges it will be hard but necessary, teaching him that isolation is both a burden and a shield. After eliminating Slatcher in a meticulously planned operation, Evan uncovers a more sinister conspiracy that reaches into the highest levels of government. Charles Van Sciver, another graduate of the orphan program, emerges from the shadows as the mastermind orchestrating the hunt for Evan. In a tense confrontation at an abandoned warehouse, Van Sciver reveals the tragic truth. Jack Johns had fabricated Evan's final assignment as a desperate attempt to warn him and force him off the grid. Jack paid the ultimate price for this betrayal, executed by his own colleagues for trying to protect his protege. Van Sciver, now operating with official sanction, explains that the orphan program continues under his command with a new directive, systematically eliminating high-risk former operatives. The program's evolution reflects changing times. With advanced drone technology and automated warfare systems, human assassins have become obsolete and liability. Van Sciver, embracing this new reality with cold pragmatism, declares his intention to be the last orphan standing. This revelation fundamentally alters Evan's understanding of his circumstances. He's not merely evading individual threats, but fighting against an entire system methodically designed to erase him and others like him. The novel concludes with Evan in a moment of quiet reflection, studying a classified most wanted list populated with names of former orphans, each representing a potential ally or deadly enemy. Though physically wounded and emotionally scarred, he remains resilient. During a solitary New Year's Eve, as fireworks illuminate the sky, his attention fixes on Peter's small handprint smudged on his refrigerator door. In a departure from his rigorous training to leave no traces, he consciously decides to preserve this innocent mark, a small but profound gesture representing his choice to maintain human connections despite his dangerous circumstances. The epilogue delivers a chilling final scene. Jack Johns in a remote mountain cabin, methodically training another young boy in the arts of survival and killing. This revelation not only illuminates the origins of another orphan, but suggests the program's cycle of creating deadly operatives continues unabated. This haunting conclusion serves as a stark reminder that while Evan has managed to break free from his past, others remain ensnared within the program's web, and the ghosts of his former life, embodied by both allies and enemies from the orphan program, will persistently shadow his future. At the heart of Orphan X lies a moral code, the Ten Commandments that Jack Johns instilled in Evan to keep him both effective and human. These rules aren't just tactical guidelines, but ethical principles that shape Evan's decisions throughout the novel. 1. Never make it personal. 2. How you do anything is how you do everything. 3. Look beyond the target. 4. Never let an innocent die. 5. Master your surroundings. 6. Never kill a kid. 7. One mission at a time. 8. Know when it's time to get out. 9. Always play offense. 10. Never make promises you can't keep. These commandments create tension throughout the narrative as Evan struggles to adhere to them while facing increasingly personal threats. When Sam White is executed during a phone call, Evan breaks the first commandment. It was personal, setting in motion a series of events that nearly cost him his life. Beyond these explicit rules, Evan operates by an implicit code of honor. Despite his lethal abilities, he uses violence only when necessary and often gives his targets opportunities to walk away. He protects the vulnerable, not because it's profitable or strategically advantageous, but because it's right. This warrior code extends to how Evan treats others in his daily life. He respects boundaries, keeps his word, and maintains his cover not just for tactical reasons, but because breaking these principles would compromise who he is. When Mia confronts him about investigating her thoroughly, she articulates what Evan's code has cost him. People build trust, Evan. That's how relationships work. That's what they are. The novel suggests that such codes are both necessary and limiting. They provide structure and meaning, but can also isolate. Evan's struggle to balance his warrior identity with his humanity reflects broader questions about how we maintain our moral center in a world that often rewards its absence. Orphan X ultimately tells a story about choice and its power to redeem. Despite being trained as a government assassin from childhood, Evan chooses a different path, using his lethal skills to protect rather than destroy. This choice defines him more than his training or abilities. When Evan refuses to continue working for the government and implements the smoke contingency to disappear, he makes a pivotal choice that sets him against his former handlers. Rather than selling his skills to the highest bidder or retiring to a beach, he becomes the nowhere man, helping those who have nowhere else to turn. Each mission represents another choice: to risk his security for strangers, to uphold his commandments even when tactically inconvenient, to maintain his humanity in situations designed to strip it away. When Morena tearfully explains she doesn't want her sister to be all broken like me, Evan's response, "You don't have to worry about that anymore," reflects not just capability, but choice. He chooses to help despite the risk. This theme extends to smaller moments as well. When Peter's handprint marks Evan's pristine refrigerator, his decision to leave it there rather than immediately clean it represents a choice to allow human connection despite its messiness. When Mia Hall cleans Evan's blood trail from the hallway but tells him she can't keep him in their lives, she makes a difficult choice to protect her son. The novel's conclusion emphasizes this theme. After surviving Slatcher's attack and learning about Van Sciver's larger conspiracy, Evan could choose to run or hide. Instead, he remains in his apartment watching fireworks on New Year's Eve, choosing to live rather than merely survive. When he sees a balloon outside his window with "Next Time" written in Peter's handwriting, it represents the possibility of future choices, of connections that might be rebuilt. In a world where Evan was trained to be a weapon, an object used by others, his consistent exercise of choice transforms him into something else entirely, a human being with agency, responsibility, and the capacity for both destruction and protection. His redemption lies not in erasing his violent capabilities, but in choosing how to use them, a lesson that resonates far beyond the page.